for the second time in less than a year, and for the third time in history, a charter school in the city of Indianapolis, chartered by the mayor of Indianapolis, has closed partly because of problems with finances. Back during the administration of Bart Peterson, there was the Flanner House High School that was a high school designed to, you know, handle men and women who were not traditional high school students. There were serious allegations of financial impropriety, and the charter school board under Bart Peterson pulled their charter. This was back in the middle part of Mayor Peterson's administration. And then we know last November, just as we were going into the Christmas holidays, there were, you know, serious financial problems with the Stonegate Early College Charter School out in Warren Township, where they kind of just ran out of money and didn't plan adequately, and it was just a big mess. And fortunately, those students, the last I heard, everybody got settled, and those seniors were able to walk across the aisle, get their diplomas at successor schools. Well, yesterday afternoon, the mayor's office announced that they are taking the steps to revoke the charter of the Indianapolis Project School. This is a school located on East 22nd Street at the Monon Trail on the western edge of the Martindale-Brightwood neighborhood. And this is a school, remember, when we talked about the I-STEP scores a couple of weeks ago and how just African-American students did, the project school was at the back of the bus with only 32.6% of African-Americans passing English language arts and just 25% of African-Americans passing math. And at that point, we said, and we looked over the last 3 to 4 years of the academic performance of that school, and it was worse than the Imagine schools, and usually those are the ones that I'm beating up on, and those are Ball State charter schools, by the way. But there were some serious problems found. And so in our studios this afternoon, is in his first appearance on the program, is the Deputy Mayor for Education, Jason Cloth. Beth Bray, who is the director of the Office of the Mayor's Charter School Office and the Office of Educational Innovation in the mayor's office, and legally by contract, she was the one that sent the letter out to the project school that said, you know, your stuff's getting revoked. Also in the studio are two individuals that the mayor has appointed to be trustees over what they hope to be in the next 3 weeks, a process that will get the 320 students based upon last year's enrollment at the project school. This is a 1 through 8 or a K through 8, and we'll find out a grade school. All of these students placed at schools, hopefully, where their parents can choose. And my good friend Angela Smith-Jones of the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce, along with Robert Vane, have accepted that responsibility from the mayor to do that. So, guys, welcome. Deputy Mayor, let me start with you. There have only been 3 charter schools pulled by the past 2 mayors that involve some financial problems. There are a couple of other schools. I think the Fountain Square Academy, their charter was pulled over some other issues. And I think so. Really, I think it's been a total of 4 over the years. What led the administration to take this decision?
Well, first, thank you very much for having me on. I think the mayor's position has been that all students, regardless of the neighborhood they live in, deserve access to a high-quality education. The project school has demonstrated chronic, pervasive underperformance across multiple aspects of the mayor's performance framework, the first area of which is academic performance. The school ranks in the bottom 5% in Marion County and the bottom 2% statewide on the I-STEP results. Mm-hmm. They've failed to meet AYP, or their annual yearly progress. They failed to meet the adequate individual student growth on I-STEP and NWEA, and the school would likely be labeled an F under the new accountability framework. Mm-hmm. In addition to the academics, there were serious financial concerns. The school failed to appropriately administer federal grants in their 2010-2011 audit, failed to achieve a balanced budget with revenue exceeding expenditures for 3 consecutive years, failed to maintain an adequate cash balance to fund general operating expenses, e.g. their payroll, failed to maintain an appropriate debt-to-asset ratio, which created concerns around financial solvency. So Their debt-to-asset ratio is around 2%. Industry standard is closer to 10%. There were operational concerns. The school had not met its enrollment in the past 4 years. And in addition, we had concerns about the governance. So, for instance, the board chair of the Indianapolis Project School is the school leader of the Bloomington Project School and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So the school leader here in Indianapolis is the board chair for Bloomington. There are two staff members that serve on the board as well. And so that led us to feel like the necessary changes and steps that would be required to get on a different path were unlikely to occur. And so based on that holistic view of right. the school, we made that the difficult decision.
The problem with federal grants were these Title I monies, were these special education monies, or were these a different kind of federal grant? Because usually in a school in an urban neighborhood, the primary federal grants would be Title I or special education.
Yes. So this is Beth Bray. Yes, so the school qualifies for both Title I and special education funds. Mm-hmm. According to the State Board of Account audit, which took place at the close of the 2010 fiscal year, two things happened, according to the State Board of Accounts. So they were using restricted federal funds, such as Title I and special ed, to pay for general operating expenses, payroll.
You can't do that. Uncle don't like that.
That's right. And they had an overdrawn general fund of over $224,000, which, again, State Board of Accounts highlighted and showed that that was a no-no as well.
There was also something that this school seemed to have been operating on borrowed money, that they were taking out loans, they were getting lines of credit from a bank, which is kind of okay if this is a regular business, but it's not normal for any kind of public school, whether it's a charter school or whether it's a school district like a township or beautiful Beech Grove or even IPS.
So, you know, we've been monitoring the school's academic, operational, and financial performance over time through routine site visits, annual reviews, and we were in the process, actually, of completing our full four-year charter review when last Friday we received a call from a staff member expressing concern that she had not been paid as anticipated on July 6th. Upon that request, upon our request, I should say, she forwarded an email from the school leader 4 days in advance of when the staff should be paid, indicating that they were changing their payroll schedule. And so we had actually previously reached out to the school's accountants to receive their 630 to 2012 year-end financial statements, which we then received on July 16th, so this Monday. The accountants confirmed that on July 6th, when payroll should have been administered, the school had $6,000 in the bank. The school the following week received two minor deposits. However, these funds were also insufficient to cover payroll. And so as a result, the school issued payroll the following week and overdrew their account by $27,000. The financial statements also indicated that the school's expenditures exceeded their revenue by over $90,000. So this is the third year in which their expenditures have exceeded revenue. So the only way for them to remain financially solvent was to accrue additional debt. So as of this year, the school's debt-to-asset ratio is 2%, or within $150,000, compared to, as I said earlier, the industry standard of 10%. So this means that if they had failed to meet their enrollment by 20 students, their debt-to-asset ratio would be
equal. And they would be upside down.
And they would be upside down.
I'm even more disturbed by any business, whether it's a school or a hamburger joint, changing the schedule that they're going to pay their employees. That comes borderline to some labor law issues, among other things.
Well, I think the primary concern that we had was not so much – so they explained it that they were moving from a 26 pay cycle to a 24. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're within their right to do that. But to do so with 4 days notice and explain to staff that they weren't going to be getting a paycheck in 4 days – that really hit staff. But then when we dug into the numbers, their accountants shared with us that they actually didn't have sufficient funds either on the 6th or on the 13th last Friday. So when they did issue payroll last Friday on the 13th, they overdrew by, as Jason said, $27,000. So, you know, we learned this information on Monday. We got all of the financials, the full picture on Monday. And, you know, we issued the notice on Tuesday.
Now, we've got Angela Smith-Jones, Robert Vane, our trustees. What is their role? What will they be doing? Trustees, the trustees are reaching for a microphone themselves.
Here. Well, the trustees are charged essentially with ensuring that the students and families are impacted as little as possible and that they have a high-quality option for next year. So we are very grateful for Angela and Robert's assistance in this matter. And I will turn it over to them to talk a little bit about what they'll be doing over the next few weeks.
Angela, what are y'all going to be doing?
Thank you. What I'm working on now is compiling a complete list of all of the schools that have open slots and positions from mm-hmm. K through 8 and getting that ready so that we can have the school fair next Thursday evening.
This will be at the Overcoming Church next Thursday evening. What time?
At 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then as well as compiling a list of the schools that have available positions for the students, I recognize that this is a very emotional time for the family. So I will also be completing a list of hotlines for families to call if they feel like they need emotional support during this transitional time to make sure their children are transitioning well into the new academic environment and or institution.
Ask a couple of these were dumb questions I was thinking this morning, knowing we'd be talking to you. Did the Project School, was that a school where you had to have uniforms?
No, it was not.
It was not. So what can be provided, will there be an outreach to perhaps the private sector? Because all of a sudden, if you're telling a parent that is we're preparing for their kids to go back to the Project School on August the 6th, and they went out to Target and Meijer and all these good places buying all these back-to-school outfits for the kid, and now the potential schools that they might go to are uniform-required schools, would there be some folks in the private sector or the foundation sector that might be willing to eat the cost of some uniforms or maybe two to three or four sets of uniforms for these students to attend?
That's an excellent question. I do not have the answer to that now, but that's part of getting into reaching out to the schools. Mm-hmm. There are private schools as well as charter and IPS that are interested in helping to find positions for these
students. I'm sure there's a line longer than to get into Lucas Oil Stadium trying to, wrap their arms around these kids. One to help and then, hey, there's some money in here for us kind of thing. But to try to reduce extra cost for parents because, them uniforms add up.
Oh, yes, they do. And that is part of what's being inquired as we're reaching out to these schools and getting their interest. Because we don't have any specific businesses that have come forward yet, mm-hmm. although we are very open to anyone saying, here is an opportunity for us to help provide uniforms for these students.
All right, 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon News with Amos. You may have questions about this. This is the closing of the Indianapolis Project Schools. They were scheduled to start school on the same school day that a number of school districts are starting. That is Monday, August the 6th. So this is like 20 days away for parents at the Indianapolis Project School. Let me go to Lyndon at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, this is Lyndon Hill, Dean of the School of Education at Marion University here in Indianapolis. First off, I want to offer my 100% support behind the actions that the Office of School Innovation and the Mayor's Office are taking with respect to the Project School. I'm familiar with it, familiar with the potential, but also recognize the reality of the situation, and so I support that move 100%. The question I had, and I think it may have been answered while I was listening, was what mechanisms and procedures were going to be in place to assist the families and the parents and the kids finding other schools. And so that was answered there along the way. So I appreciate that, and I just wanted to make sure that I registered my voice for support for the actions.
I appreciate it, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lyndon.
Well, I want to reiterate that we made the decision on Monday, issued the letter of intent to revoke on Tuesday, sent letters to parents, and issued a press release to ensure that we reached as many parents as possible. I want to acknowledge that the trustees will be holding an enrollment fair on Thursday, July 26th at Overcoming Church, located at 2203 Columbia Avenue. It's right around the corner from the Project School. So in addition to working alongside the Archdiocese, IPS has several placements within magnets, other charter schools, and private schools. We're confident that we're going to be able to place the displaced students. And if families are interested in attending a private school, they can enroll their children, and the school will complete a voucher application on their behalf if they meet the income level guidelines. The voucher will help cover the offset the cost of the tuition. And parents can reach out to the IDOE or go to their website to get that information.
I appreciate it. 239-1310, 239-1310 is after his name. I got an email. You know, I tell you how the all these charter schools, you know, all want to help. I got an email from school not even open yet. Carpe Diem says, hey, we'll be ready by the middle of August. We're ready to go. So you can add Carpe Diem to the list. And it might, that might, for the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, and that might give, since they're not supposed to be open, it's a brand new school, and they put the roof on already. Anyway, back to the phones in Richard. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Amos.
How you
doing?
Good
afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're on the air. What's up?
My name is Richard Griswold. I'm Director of Student Assignment for Indianapolis Public Schools. I just wanted to make the parents and the community aware that we stand ready to assist those parents and students in looking at IPS options, magnet programs. You can call 226-4415, my office, and student assignment to get information, or stop into the Education Center at 120 East Walnut, and we'll be able to assist you in making some choices.
And I bet you're going to be all over the enrollment fair next Thursday, the 26th, 6 o'clock at Overcoming Church.
That's correct. We'll have representatives from the Boundary Schools as well as magnet programs there to talk with the parents. We'll also have enrollment specialists who will be able to do that enrollment, take the necessary information that we need there at the fair, and actually make the assignments and enrollments right there.
Now, I got to ask you, because I asked this question earlier, and I know how Dr. White is on being uniform compliant. Given that the students at the project school, this was not a uniform school, and all IPS schools are, and I think a number of the charter schools are as well, and knowing in the spirit of we're going to bid on another Super Bowl, and Dr. White was instrumental in convincing those NFL owners, would you talk to Dr. White, and maybe he could be instrumental talking to some of those Super Bowl partners that he had here in the city who would be, I'm being very serious about this, who could underwrite uniform costs for these students at the project school who want to attend IPS or a school that has uniforms? Because to suddenly ask a parent that have already bought their back-to-school outfits to either have to try to return the layaway, back to the layaway, and, you know, they don't like that. Or cover that. I'm sure there's some of Dr. White's friends that helped him in the Super Bowl that would be willing to help in this situation.
I will certainly carry that to the boss. I know that we have vehicles in place already through our social work network to assist students with the uniform situation.
All right. I'm sure the trustees, you know, the situation here would appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is after news names. Let me go to Barato at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, how are you, Amos?
I'm fine.
Thanks for taking my call. Actually, I'm representing today at the Martin Christian Center. We were fortunate enough for the past 2 years to be the 21st Century Community Learning Center provider for the project school. So this we're feeling the impact, most importantly, at what the options would be for our students. Certainly concerned in terms of what will be available for students and families.
Now, the program that you all were providing was what again?
The 21st Century Community Learning Center. We are their provider. We partner with Martin University and the Mayo Missionary Baptist Church. And through Edna Martin, we work to provide students, again, over 80 students over the past 2 years, after-school supports and forms of tutoring, access to STEM instruction via the NASA Lab and Martin and various other supports. So we have a pretty vested interest there. So we are again, our concern, first and foremost, is to how we can help those parents transition at this time.
All right. How can, you know, Edna Martin Christian Center in this program, how can they help Robert Vane, Angela Smith-Jones in this situation with the things that you guys are trying to do?
Well, let me give my email very quickly and the phone number so folks can both email it, questions and answers and offers of help, and leave voicemail messages, and I will get back to you. The email is R-V-A-N-E, so R-Vane, and then the number 1 at indy.gov. So R-Vane, the number 1 at indy.gov. Or phone is 327-3121. 327-3121. And we really appreciate the calls that we've received, not only on your program, Amos, but some of the people who've reached out to us personally since the release went out yesterday. It's all hands on deck. We appreciate the fact that people want to help these students. They understand that this is a difficult choice, but a necessary choice. And the fact that the church right around the corner wants to be involved shows that the faith-based community in the neighborhood is on board with us and wants to partner with us as we find the best educational opportunities for these young men and women. It's just as simple as that. Choice and accountability are at the heart of the education reform movement. That is what this is all about, and we're going to move forward, and we're going to make sure every one of these young men and women have a place to go to school and a place to go to school where they can not only do well, but do well in the community beyond their time in that school.
I appreciate it, Barato. Let me go to Christy at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. I was just calling to be in support of the mayor's office right now. I've been a public educator in IPS for several years as a principal and a teacher. I transitioned as a superintendent for two schools, charter schools for the mayor's office. And the accountability system, the support, and the transparency has always been there. And so while this is a difficult time, I think, for families and the students who attend the project school, the transparency and expectations for excellence with the mayor's schools has always been there. And so this is really just a phone call in support of the mayor's office and the good work that they do for our children in the city.
All right, appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me go quickly to Brenda. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. How you doing?
I'm fine.
It's unfortunate for those young children over there. I don't call them young men and women. I call them young boys and girls because that's what they are. Second, Amos, is the mayor is not going far enough. Has this been reported to the city prosecutor for misuse of federal dollars? Second, Amos, the mayor needs to also report this to the U.S. Department of Education Office of the Inspector General. It is their duty to investigate the misuse of federal dollars. Also, Amos, this needs to also go to the U.S. Department of Justice, because now we're talking about federal funding, Title I money that was the state says these children are special ed, and then they're going to take that money and use it for their own personal business. This is wrong, Amos. It's criminal. This is not just happening in that school district. It's happening all across Indiana. It's happening all across this country where our children are disproportionately being placed in special education. These people are using our children to make money off the backs of these babies, and then we turn around and void them out of this, out of their existence.
Right,
I'm ashamed, Amos.
Hold on. Brenda, you made an excellent point. Let me let Beth Bray from the Mayor's Charter School Office kind of respond, because I think, you know, Brenda has raised a similar concern, and this is something where, you know, messages need to be sent, whether it is a regular public school or a charter school. There's a right way to handle federal money, and when there isn't, there ought to be consequences for that, Beth.
Yeah, we completely agree, and I think that one of our expectations is that schools will demonstrate fiscal responsibility and be in compliance with both state and federal law. Our primary priority in the next 3 weeks will be placing each one of these kids and families. That's, you know, all hands on deck. We're focused on the families right now, but certainly we will make sure that there is accountability for the school and how they have managed public funds. We are absolutely committed to that. There's no question. Right now, what we want to focus on with the short time we have available is prioritizing the kids first. And you absolutely have a guarantee that we will be issuing accountability for the way that they've managed their funds.
Deputy Mayor?
Well, I would just echo Beth's concerns. And I would say that, you know, part of the reason we made this decision was because of the academic performance we were seeing disproportionately with low-income African-American students. Only 13.7% of children who qualified for free and reduced lunch at this school passed the I-STEP this year, and that's just simply unacceptable and was incorporated into the holistic approach we took to evaluating the school's performance.
Even when I looked at the I-STEP scores of individuals that passed English, language, arts, and math, 81% of the whites, and it was a small number, but 81% of the whites At the Project School passed English language arts. Only 32.6 of African Americans did. 74% of whites passed math. Only 25%. And I believe in their charter, one of the promises they made was to reduce the achievement gap. And now maybe I went to public school. That don't look like the gap got anywhere near close. That's the difference between the New York Yankees and whatever the worst team in baseball is.
I would echo that, Amos. The school had three primary academic goals, the first of which was to eliminate the predictive value of race, ethnicity, and gender. And yet students of color and those qualifying for free and reduced lunch demonstrated among the lowest proficiency in the state with significant achievement gaps. The second academic goal was that students would achieve no less than 1 year of academic growth. And yet in 2010-11, only 46% of students demonstrated 1 year of academic growth. And the third academic goal was that each student will read, write, and compute at or above grade level in 3 years. And only 36% of students attending for 3 years demonstrated proficiency in 2011. They were simply not meeting the academic expectations of students, families, and our community. And that was part of the reason we made this difficult decision, because we feel that it's in the best interest of students and families in the long term.
I appreciate it. Let me go to Brandon right quick at 239-1310. And this just in, it is raining downtown. I'm in shock. Brandon?
Amos.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine, sir. What's up?
Well, I'm calling as a parent of a African-American child at the Project School who is above grade level in both math and language arts. And I'm a little disconcerted about the discourse that's being laid out, is that this is some, you know, overarching action for the concern of the families. Because if the mayor's office had this level of concern, at no point in time throughout this investigation or alleged investigation has the mayor's office reached out formally to any of the parents in the Project School to let us know in the spring before the kids were dismissed for the summer, that this was a reality that the kids were potentially facing. To leave these kids and these families with 2 weeks left when many of the charter schools that many families would have opted to choose for have already met their quotas, they're already full. The second point that I want to make to you and to make sure that the rest of the folks understand this is that talking about eliminating the predictive value of race on academic achievement cannot be eradicated in 3 years' time. It takes a tremendous amount of time to undo the damage that is done to our kids in the places they were before they came to the Project School. And that's part of the issue here, is that when we're talking about holding people accountable, that's exactly what we should be doing. But there are very few schools outside of the Project School that even have the courage to name the impact that is being had on our children of color in academic institutions. And they did have the courage to call it out. And they have been working at it. And if you specifically look at that data and begin to disaggregate it, what you will see is that the cohort of the kids that have been there from the time the school opened to now are making significant gains. But what Terry Banks, who is the principal, his greatest mistake, I guess, if you want to hold him up for criticism, was opening his doors to any kid that the public schools, the other charter schools, kicked out at any point in time, regardless of how academically low they were, regardless of what challenges they were facing. He always took them, knowing full well that those kids would bring down their test scores, but he took them because he wanted to create a place where every single child felt worth and valued. And it is an absolute travesty. It is a travesty that this shell game is being played to talk about financial accountability when the reality is that there were other charter schools that committed significant financial malfeasance in this community. And the
give me an sir, give me an example. Because I might grant you the academics and the difference between the older grades and the younger grades. But with my business person's hat on, with my manager's hat on, what I'm seeing in terms of the finances is unacceptable. So now
my wife was a teacher at Stonegate Charter School that closed last December. Mm-hmm. That school was in such financial disarray that the board of the school opted to close itself when the mayor's office had full knowledge of how poorly the accounting was and the fact that they were not paying their bills, and they did absolutely nothing.
And is that the only example? I mean, you made a blanket statement of charters, plural, in terms of financial malfeasance. Your terms is Stone. What are the other examples?
The other examples, they revoked the charters of other schools, but they gave those schools
Sir, what other schools for financial irregularities, financial malfeasance, again, your words. There's only been four charters revoked in this town.
Yep.
So what was the other one? Were you talking about the Flanner House under the Peterson administration?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're only talking about the same three. That's not a pattern, sir. That's not a pattern of malfeasance. The other thing is, please explain to me how other charter schools can have outstanding performances of African-American students in I-STEP, and they're at the top of the list, and Project School is at the bottom, worse than the Imagine Schools that I have dogged out on this show for 3 years. Please explain that to me.
Because I will tell you this, because what we are ultimately seeing is that those same scores that everyone is raving about are those same scores that our academic institutions of higher learning are saying do not demonstrate to any kind of academic skill that counts worth anything in a real-world work setting and in an academic setting like a college or a university.
I'm running short of time because I got Senator Joe Donnelly holding. So, sir, you're telling me that when I look at a school that over a 3 or 4 year period, the vast majority of African-American students consistently can't pass an I-STEP test across all grades, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8 grades, I should accept that result. Is that what you're telling me?
Accept it, but what I'm saying is that they should be afforded the amount of time that is needed.
This school has had 4 years. From my point of view, just as I have said on this show about Imagine, to me, the Imagine Schools Ball State should have closed them last year. I've said that consistently. Based on your academic performance, this school should have been closed. And based upon your financial performance, not only should the school be closed, but my opinion, somebody needs to go before the bar of justice for malfeasance of my tax dollars. It is my tax dollars. It is the tax dollars of my audience going into that school. We could talk and maybe defend the academics. You can't defend that financial malfeasance. And you, as a taxpayer, sir, should be highly upset. As upset as me. I appreciate the call. One final thing, because I've got Senator Joe Donnelly on the line, and I want him to be confident that the federal funds that he's moving here in education are being used the proper way. If parents want more information, if people want more information if their kids are at the project school, who do they get a hold of? How do they get a hold of folks?
Let me just remind everyone of the email and phone number and the parents' resource fair. Email is rvane, and number one, RVANE, and the number one, at indy.gov. Phone number is 327-3121, 327-3121. And the parents' resource fair is at the Overcoming Church, 2203 Columbia, next Thursday, July 26th, from 6 to 8.
All right. Deputy Mayor of Education Jason Cloth, thank you. Beth Bray, Director of the Mayor's Charter Schools. Angela Smith-Jones and Robert Vane, they are the trustees of this emotional transition period over the situation with the Project School. And I'm sure we're going to talk more about this in the days to come. Thank you very, very much. All right. Welcome back. Open lines rest of the way out. What's on your mind today? 239-1310. 239-1310. We got the Project School charter revoked. See, the mayor says he's going to bid again on the Super Bowl. The bid would be in 2014, in the early part of 2014 for the 2018 Super Bowl. All that and a whole lot more stuff going on to the phones. And Casey and Lee, hi there. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. What's up?
Hi, yes. We're just calling in from a parent's perspective about the Project School.
Okay.
We have two young children that have been in the Project School for 3 years now, and it has been nothing short of life-altering for our children. Our children were both adopted out of the foster care system. They had multiple failures in other schools, and they attended public school, they attended private school, and nothing worked for them until we went to the Project School. Mm-hmm. I think judging a school on a test score alone, while test scores are important, it gives only a small portion of the story. And I'm hoping that we can talk about the larger story here, which is the mission of the school.
What is the mission of the school?
Well, the mission of the school is to create well-balanced children that can be successful in society. Our children, instead of being in a principal's office every day, have now learned to relate to other people in their environment. They've learned to be part of a community. They've learned to share. The curriculum is engaging for them. So instead of finding ways to get into trouble, they're actually able to listen and learn. This is a very, very special school. It's got a project-based curriculum. It helps kids who have a learning style that is not conducive to traditional education.
What is that? Because you're using a phrase that maybe listeners aren't familiar with. What is a project-based curriculum?
Well, they do the traditional type of work in the morning, mm-hmm. and then in the afternoon, they do projects that enhance the learnings that they develop throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they are allowed to do some classes which are called passions as well for personal development. So project-based curriculum, it's more interactive. It's more case study. It's more hands-on. It's more than sitting in a desk all day working on worksheets.
Okay.
And this works very, very well for boys, for example, who are, you know, a little more active.
Mm-hmm.
It works well for kids who have problems with attention deficit types of disorders,
mm-hmm.
and it helps kids who have lack of confidence from being behind for several years. What folks really need to understand is that the project school does not close their doors to anyone, so their baseline is much lower when you're looking at the scores. So they have many, many more years of having to overcome those scores. So the baseline is lower than you would find in a lot of different schools.
But how would I, as a taxpayer in the state of Indiana, since my tax dollars go to every public school, whether it's in Fort Wayne, Ligoti, or on East 22nd Street, how do I evaluate whether this school is working when under No Child Left Behind, under existing state laws, the one of the metrics that I have to measure how schools are doing is ISTEP.
Right.
And Grant,
well, I think, A, you look at the baseline and where mm-hmm. these kids came from. I think, second, you look at year-to-year progress and make sure there's improvement. But I think the biggest thing that you do is you talk to the parents, because parent satisfaction at this school is unparalleled. I have to tell you that you go to teacher conferences, conference days, and you get almost 100% participation.
Mm-hmm.
We had focus groups at our school, and parents came in groves to talk about the school. It's a very special school, and you have to ask them what has gone on with your child over the last few years that your child has been in this school. And they will talk to you about the growth that they've had as a human being. A lot of these kids in this school, they weren't even learning. They were in a principal's office every day. Now they are engaged. They're participating. They love to come to school. They have hope for their future. And they're back on an academic track.
But it's been 4 years, and as I look at the performance just of African American students, that's what this program looks at, and in fairness, we look at every school in this area, and I don't see the growth. I see growth at other public schools. I see growth at IPS schools. I see some IPS schools where, you know, the results are horrible. I see growth in other charter schools. I'm not seeing the growth here over a year-to-year basis. Can you understand why folks like me would be looking at that and going, what's going on over there?
Yeah, well, I do understand why you would be looking at that. I will say up front, I'm not African American. I'm not part of that community, so I don't necessarily feel comfortable talking for that community. I will tell you, though, that, you know, there seems to be a big divide in Indianapolis in terms of education equity. And, you know, I think that some things are just harder to turn around. But the project school at least has addressed the issue. I haven't heard of a school that addresses the racial divide the way that the project school has. And a lot of these kids, they haven't been there all 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, some have only been there a couple years. Again, it takes time.
And one of the things that I pulled from the state data was how African Americans did in the project school this year in ISTEP and how, you know, non-Hispanic white students did in ISTEP. And the gap is humongous, to be frank about it.
Right. I think the gap is pretty humongous across the board, isn't it? I mean,
no, because
that part of the problem in our society.
Not
today?
Necessarily, because I see some school districts where the gap has lessened significantly. I'm looking at 50 percentage point gaps at the project school, and there are other schools where I'm seeing the achievement gap in the 15 to 20% range. Others at less than 15 percentage points, less than 10 percentage points.
And my question is, how long have those schools been open? And, you know, again, if you're a project school, I mean, we're going on our fourth year. We've only been open for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, these things take time. I agree with you that it's important, but we need to let it run its full course.
You have
many more things going on at the project school than just the ISTEP scores.
So many
kids are back on an academic track that were not before. And so many kids have such a difficult background. I mean, we're talking about kids who have had some of the most difficult backgrounds in the city.
You know, you mentioned the parental involvement at the project school, and that's a very positive story. Does that involvement extend to attending the board meetings of the board of the project school?
Absolutely. I'm going to turn that question over to my husband, though, because he's the one that attends those meetings.
Okay.
Okay, so Lee.
Hi, Lee.
He said hi, Lee.
Hi, Lee.
Hi there.
How are you? So you regularly attend the board meetings of the project school, is that correct?
No, I actually attend the parent meetings. Project school.
Okay. Do parents attend the meetings of the actual board, the board that has the fiduciary and the legal responsibility over the project school?
Well, since I haven't personally attended those meetings, I can't tell you how many parents do attend, but I do know that the list of when the meetings occur is posted on the front entrance of the school,
mm-hmm.
and that parents are always invited to attend. And one of the first things the school leader communicated to us when we joined the community was that those board meetings are open and we can come anytime.
And the reason that I asked that question is trying to get some sense as to whether the board, in those public meetings, informed parents as to the precarious financial condition of the school.
Yeah, the precarious financial condition of the school, that's a phrase that I'm really shocked to hear about the project school, because I tried to go to the mayor's website today and look at some documents related to that, and it just kept telling me access denied, access denied.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, why won't the mayor's office let parents see these documents?
Yeah, because we have seen nothing of the kind. As a matter of fact, we have found the administration there to be highly transparent. And they're the type of school that if you ever have any sort of issue and come forward, they actually do something about it. They're very responsive and transparent.
So the administration of the school never let parents on to the fact that there was a state board of accounts audit, which is public record and can be available from the state website of the state board of accounts, that showed that they were overdrawn by $250,000 at the end of the last fiscal year, June 2010.
Wow, that's incredible. No, the school did not tell me that, and I don't really feel qualified to comment on it.
Okay.
The school is expanding. So anytime a school, a business expands, you're going to be in the red for a while. So actually, that wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. But I don't know the ins and outs of the financial situation. I do know that the project school is putting out a press release there. So let's let the Principal Terry Banks speak for himself. What I want to convey is just the environment of the project school, my experiences with the project school. If you've got time, I'd like to talk to you about what a typical day looks like at the project school. You'll find that it's a very special school.
What is the length of the school day?
The length of the school day is from 8 a.m. to 3:10.
Okay, so it's a traditional 4 7-hour school day.
Yes.
Okay, and the traditional 180 days of instruction.
Yes.
Was there any thought that, given the split nature of the education there, with traditional education in the morning and the non-traditional in the afternoon, to go to a longer school day, which might provide additional time of instruction to what I would call render under Caesar? In terms of the knowledge needed to deal with I-STEP and I-READ and all this other kind of standardized test, and then again have sufficient time to do the other kind of learning that it sounds like has a positive benefit on young people?
Well, I think that you're creating a false dichotomy there. I have to say, they're learning just in the afternoon just as well as they are in the morning.
But
they're
they're
just extending what they're learning in the morning with practical application.
But you can understand that when I look at the cold, hard numbers, and that's all I have to go by, and that's how we evaluate things in this state and now in many states, I don't see the progress. I'm sure you can appreciate.
Well, you don't see the progress on one indicator, which is an I-STEP score.
But that's the base.
But that's not the only indicator. If you come out and talk to the parents and hear the many, 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 many success stories of how children are now able to behave mm-hmm. and learn and be engaged and care about the community, from kids who did not fit in previous schools, had no hope in previous schools, and were on a very downward trajectory in previous schools. Are you telling me that's not an indicator of success? Because these are kids that would have dropped out of the school system by the time that they could legally.
Have you ever brought these concerns to the legislators who write the laws, who have written the laws, who have created the structure of how we evaluate public schools in this state?
No, I have not, because I'm not saying that test scores aren't important. What I'm saying is that it's one indicator of success, and there are many indicators of success in a school. I would like to see the test scores come up as well, but I also acknowledge the low baseline and that this will take time. I'm sure the school will continue to do all that it can to increase the test scores, and I know that there are many meetings happening right now to talk about those very issues.
What is, in your mind, as a taxpayer, as a parent, what is a sufficient amount of time to give a school to get up to snuff? Is it four? You say it's not, shouldn't be 4 years, then should it be 5, 6, 10?
Well, I think what you want to look at is what your baseline is and what type of whether the school is growing each year. And I think you need to look at test scores, but I also think you need to look at parent involvement, and I think you need to look at the growth of the entire child. The reason that we picked the project school, and we could have picked any school,
mm-hmm.
But we picked the project school because they focus on the whole child. From the very first day that we went to the project school, the teacher, everything's behind glass. So if anybody wants to go see the project school, should it still be open, they can go and take a tour. Everything's behind glass, and you can see what goes on. The first time we took a tour, the teacher raised her hand in the classroom, and everybody got quiet, and you could have heard a pin drop. And we asked the teacher, wow, how do you do that? Because living in Indianapolis, we've seen many schools where the kids are out of control. They
All right.
said, we have community meeting every morning. We focus on community building. And the kids understand why it's important to listen, because if they don't, if they act up, they will be hurting another person's chance of learning. And
right.
I thought, wow. And then we asked the teacher, well, how do you feel about your students? Do you
right.
love your students? The teacher got tears in her eyes. It was clear to me that she loved every single student in that classroom. That was not our experience previously to this school.
All right.
Then we spent 45 minutes on community meetings. Well, not 45, half an hour each morning in community meetings where they actually learned things about one another, how to address one another, how to have
right.
social skills.
All right, hold on. You've been very good advocates of this. I need to move on. I got to take a break. I got a whole lot of callers. I appreciate your passion, and I appreciate hearing your side of the story about the project school. Thank you, Cassie and Lee. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more after these. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Back to the phones. And Jeffrey, hi there.
Hey, Hey, my friend, how's it going? This is a good teaching moment right here. As we listened to that 10-minute story, it was all about emotion. As long as it benefits us, we don't care about others. As a taxpayer, we cannot keep on going on letting these schools let this money slip out of their hands, as they say, and you had other people just go along with it, like, hey, just pass them on to us. We saw that you got away with stealing that money. Maybe we can steal the money too. And once again, as I keep on saying, it's not really about the students. It's about the money. Who can get the money and who can come up with a good story and let the money slide away? I mean, like she said, you know, long as it was benefiting her child, we can't compensate on the black kids. Just let them slip through the hole. Thank you, my friend.
I appreciate it. Let me go to Jeff at 239-1310. Hi, Jeff.
Talk about filibustering, good God. Anyway, I want to talk about something real quick. I'm going to mention the subject a little bit, and, I'm moving on, because that lady and her husband,
Jeff, let's be fair. I mean, we're talking, when you're talking about a kid's school, it does get passionate. I mean, you're passionate about the school your child goes to. And I get that. And I understand when a parent has a positive experience with a school with their child, and then all of a sudden that school is going to be taken away from you. I get that. I understand that. You all heard how I thought about the academics when we talked about the I-STEP results a couple of weeks ago. And the project school. So this is no, you know, to folks who listen to this program, my views on the academics are no secret. I think there's a bunch of people who are just now finding out how I feel about it with that school. I am a little concerned that 60% of the students at the project school are African American. The project school and their parents are holding a news conference now. This program talks more about public education than the television stations and the Indianapolis Star put together, and the project school couldn't send me a copy of their press release to relay their side of the story. You know, I hope that when I see the television reports tonight, that I see a multicultural group of parents and staff that reflect the student population of the project school. You know, I hope I'm not looking at one monochromatic picture.
239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is back to the phones and LaToya. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
Just listening to this as a educator myself, I really get tired of hearing the fact that we have so many schools closing and that we have low test scores. Our test scores are still not being change for the African-American community. And to be quite frank, pretty much all ethnicities, their scores are not changing that much as well either. And for some reason, I feel that Indiana feels that the answer to this is, let's just open a charter school, let's open these charter schools, and it's gonna change. And then it gets the parents hyped up, and they put all their hope into this school. Well, not knowing that regardless of whatever school that you send your child to, you still need the support of that parent in order for that child to be successful. And it just really gets hard to when you hear the fact that schools are being closed because there's no change in the student score. Well, what about the parent?
Well, and this is what I was hearing from the two parents, Cassie and Lee, and then the other gentleman that called in the first hour, Brandon. They were painting the picture that the project school has this fantastic parental involvement, that parents are involved and engaged and involved in the school and involved in the lives of their children. If that is all true, then I ask you as an educator, A, that goes against the grain, and that's a good thing. That's a positive thing. So then how is that not translated at some point in the scores. I've looked at the scores while I was talking to the previous caller. I was pulling up the scores by grade at the project school in ISTEP, and I'm seeing a couple of grades. The fourth grade, fourth, fifth, sixth, and the eighth grade had pretty good scores, where 60% were passing English language arts. That's not bad. 55% was passing math in the fourth grade. 40% was passing math in the eighth grade, but the seventh grade fell off the charts. Only 26% was passing English language arts. Only 20% passing math. In the third grade, which you expect low to start out, 39% passing English language arts, 25% passing math. So the scores by grade are inconsistent. Mm-hmm. So the grades are one thing. The financial part is even more disturbing. You know, I can understand, you know, a school and the grades aren't there and you're trying to get them up and you're bringing in, and I don't want to use trouble. Yeah, I'm a little troubled that we take in kids that nobody else takes. What does that mean?
Right.
You know, all our kids are capable of learning.
Right.
So, you know, what is it? The Met High School takes in kids that have had trouble in other places and they do a fantastic job over at the Met High School.
And I think with the Met, the secret ingredient for the Met is these students did not work in a traditional school setting. Mm-hmm. And so they were at the Met, they're able to take control of their own education. And so now it's more of a value to them. A lot of our students, they get to the point where when you're in a traditional school setting, they don't see any relevance to how this prepares me for the future.
Well, I'm sure you'll agree with me, an educator. If you don't have your business side together, how can you be, you know, run a great school in terms of the education, the quality education, and you can't make payroll?
Correct.
And that's the responsibility of the same school leader.
Exactly. And that's definitely going to affect your teachers, because they're not going to focus on the students when their households are in jeopardy.
Can you imagine if it got out that IPS had to go to the bank and borrow several million dollars to do payroll? Do you know what the field day the media would have?
Oh, definitely.
They would. They are not, or any township. They'd definitely be wanting to super. So how is it a charter school can go and borrow lines of credit and borrow money, which you're not supposed to do because you should have enough money, you should know how to manage your money? And if that was a traditional public school district or a township district, there'd be a revolution in the streets.
Oh, I definitely agree.
You know, so my thing is, remember how they've screamed and hollered, we got to close these IPS schools now. We got to close it. And, oh, you can't close a school. 4 years isn't enough.
Right.
When Dr. White said that, Tony Bennett was beating him up.
Mm-hmm.
So my only thing is, you know, it's like we got to be consistent in that. And I understood the passion of the parents. I'm a little concerned that if we're going to have these problems, maybe there ought to be a flying squad of educators and administrators. That if we got a troubled charter school, somebody can walk in, change the locks on the keys, and a group of new administrators come in there and try to set it right.
Exactly.
And so the kids aren't suffering.
Exactly.
That they can get the education, that they're not being thrown out of their school, and you just get a different group of people in here to run it the right way.
Exactly, which is the same motto as you can't say really with the IPS schools. You're just not locking the door.
But you notice, you know, we're talking about, you know, how many times over this debate between public school and charter did people say, oh, the charter schools are getting all the breaks, they're getting now all of a sudden they're coming under the same accountability.
Right.
The same fingers are looking at them that have been looking at IPS or the townships. And the other thing that said, you, that parent that said they were involved and engaged, you didn't go to the board meetings?
Yes.
If you're that engaged in the school, in the parents group, why aren't you at the board meeting where they're discussing the money?
Exactly. And I think that's the thing when you say, as a parent, I'm involved.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, oh, I'm involved, meaning I go to PTO meetings. Oh, I go to my child's baseball games, basketball games, track. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To parents, that's being involved and not really looking at board meetings, because they feel that all that is being taken care of. I shouldn't have to worry about board meetings. I mean, let's be honest. We don't have parents that go to, or even educators, more in fact, go to board meetings for township and IPS schools, because they just automatically assume that all of that is being taken care of.
Good points, my sister. Good points. I appreciate it. Thank you. Let me go to Kareem right quick. Then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi there. Hey, Doc.
You know, I hear all this stuff about this public school charter, right?
Yeah.
And I've been talking about Plessy versus Ferguson and Brown versus Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been at these different meetings. I've even told Dr. Bennett that they need to come out of their ivory tower, white towers, and put that money back and give it back to Dr. White so they can do it. But my thing with the community is, I hear them on the radio every day talking about different things. But when you call them to tell them to come out to the meeting, and you let them know that you want the community to express themselves, when we go to the meetings, it's basically empty.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out, do the parents in the community want a quality education for their children, whether it's in public school or charter schools, or not? Because when we tell them to come out and show their faces and bring their children and sit and deal with it, they don't. So that's what's been happening with this city since the Mayor Hudnut administration. They'll talk on the radio. They say what they want on the radio program.
Right.
But when you tell them where the meeting's at and whatnot, they don't come out. So I'm asking them, maybe they can call in and tell me to shut up or whatever, but I want to ask the community, how much do you care about your child? When Brenda called in and talked about the statistics and the conspiracy and the RICO Act against black young boys and girls and students, how many of these parents want to get off their behind and understand that is a law that's being broken? It's a federal law. How many of these parents out here want to understand that, Dad, if you come together, you can do something? But if you're sitting at home and you're constantly not coming to the meetings, you're not coming expressing nothing, you're not sitting down with your children at these meetings and explaining what's going on, that this thing is never going to change, because Amos Brown and the Amos Brown Show can't change this problem that's been happening since segregation, integration, desegregation, now charterization. Man, we got to wake up as a community.
Yeah, all right, you made a good point. 239-1310, 239-1310. We'll take a break. It's afternoon's name is...